All right, officially starting. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for taking the time. Thanks for taking the time to learn a little bit about the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, how the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is managed and is dealt with. Thanks for coming together to take note and to take stock of a very, very important day. I was speaking in shul about how, and we'll see, throughout this conversation especially, I think that Yom HaTzma'ut is a recognition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did something really extraordinary. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things that are extraordinary, it's not always a straight shot. It's something of a mixed bag. And sometimes the thanks that we ought to be giving, just the sheer hoda'ah to Hashem for the great gift of Israel, being able to travel to Israel, being able to learn Torah in Israel, being able to interact and engage with, which is really the study for tonight, being able to interact and to engage with the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, the actual Kedusha Sa'aretz, Peros, Kedusha, Mitzvah, Trumos, Maisros, Shemitah, etc., etc. These all come into play to a far greater degree as a result of Jewish government than they ever possibly could have without. So it's a bracha. We should pause. We should say thank you. Thank you for coming together to do so. Thank you very much to our hosts. Thank you, Gideon and Rachel, for opening your homes that we may all learn together, celebrate together, and give Hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu together. Thanks also to the Adlers. It's not yet, but maybe they're on the way. It's always a pleasure having our local in-house Vizhnitzer Hasidim sponsor. Now, even so, Vizhnitzer doesn't necessarily have the warmest relationship either. But this is we're kind of writing our own script to some degree, in a good way, and in a positive way, in an appropriate way. Okay, this is a really, really appropriate topic because, as I mentioned, first of all, I once heard a very interesting thing, a shiur from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, actually on Yom Yerushalayim, where he noted that the same way that we speak about Hilchos Chag B'Chag, so we speak about the halachos that pertain to any given Yom Tov on that Yom Tov. Yom Atzmut's not a Yom Tov, but nevertheless, insofar as we're recognizing the ability, the gift of being able to settle and to be able to settle with comfort and with stability and with security in Eretz Yisrael to be able to visit. So that speaks to Kedusha Sa'aretz. Again, the presence of a Jewish government and of a Jewish Medina means an ability to interact with Kedusha Sa'aretz for hundreds of thousands of more people than otherwise would have the opportunity to do so, really millions of people than who would otherwise have had the opportunity to do so. And what comes up specifically this year as real in Yonah Diyoma throughout the entire year is Shemitah. What do we do about, I guess I'll call it the problem of Shemitah. The problem of Shemitah is that I don't know that the Torah makes any bigger ask. I don't know that there's anywhere else, any other mitzvah, in which the Torah demands more from those to whom this at least immediately applies to, and makes a greater demand on Parnassa. We kvetch and we complain about the soaring price of yeshiva tuition, but the fact of the matter is it's sort of spread out, and it's and we can do it and we figure it out. Yes, it costs a lot to live a halachic lifestyle, but here is a scenario in which, as the Torah in Parshas Behar really outlines, all in one fell swoop, we are kissing our Parnasa goodbye for an entire year. The very beginning of Parshas Behar, Torah tells us, "Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lihem ki savo el ha'aretz." When you come to the land of Asher Anino, same lachem v'shavsa ha'aretz, Shabbos la'Hashem. I apologize that this is actual Shemus. I forgot to edit this first source. At any rate, so when you come into the land, so there should be a shvisa sa'aretz. The land should be at rest. Sheshanim tizra sadecha v'sheshanim tizmor karmecha. For 6 years you shall sow your fields. For 6 years you shall prune your vineyards. V'asaftas t'vuasan, you gather in all of your grain. But then v'ashana shviyish shabbas shabbason yel la'aretz. It should be a Shabbos la'Hashem sadecha lo sizra v'charmecha lo sizmor. You cannot work the land. What's very, very clear from this particular series of psukim is that you cannot work the land during Shemitah. If you can't work the land, it means that you can't produce produce. If you can't produce produce, it means that if that is your parnasa, no parnasa for that entire seventh year. That's a major, major issue. That's a major concern. That's a major consideration. Such is Kedusha Sa'aretz. Such is the nature of the land that is imbued with sanctity, that it expresses itself. That sanctity expresses itself in all sorts of ways. the donations that we have to make to Leviim and to Kohanim and to Aniim, the degree to which certain produce has to be brought up to Yerushalayim and only consumed in Yerushalayim. But again, the greatest ask, not only when it comes to the mitzvahs that are dependent upon the actual land, but the greatest ask that I think the Torah makes of us, certainly in a financial capacity, is probably this, is probably Shemitah. So the problem, therefore, of Shemitah is, as we sometimes do when we run into financial difficulty in the line of keeping halacha, is we come up with creative solutions to some of those difficulties, some of those challenges. So this is a really, really appropriate share also now, because this is all coming on the heels of maybe the last time some of us met was for the purpose of Mechiras Chametz. Mechiras Chametz. So Mechiras Chametz is an option to a difficult financial halachic problem. What do you do? What do you do when you have, just imagine, for a moment if somebody were to own an enormous novelty-sized bottle of Glenmorangie scotch. Just imagine if you can imagine such a thing. Something that, you know, can bear, that you have to move into your home sideways in order to be able. So that's a significant asset. That's a real asset. What do you do? What do? Do you really just pour it down the drain?
Drink it.
You drink it. You make sure that you drink it ahead of time. What if you have like 20 of them in the garage? I don't know. Right? So one at a time. One at a time. What do you do? So what we do, one of the, call it whatever you will, one of the tricks, one of the strategies that we employ in order to solve this issue is that, of course, we sell the chametz. It's not mine. It really belongs to somebody else. I know that it's never happened that the guy has ever actually taken full possession of the chametz after Pesach. I know that I always get it back. I know that I never lose any money. I know that this happens year after year after year, and yet we do it. And it's legitimate. It's legitimate. We do it. So what about taking a similar notion and then applying it to the produce of Eretz Yisrael, to our farms in Eretz Yisrael? That is the notion of Heter Mechira, basically. The idea would be that if I have my farm, which I'm not allowed to work, I'm not allowed to help cultivate, so if I simply sell it to a non-Jew and create some sort of arrangement whereby it's no longer mine, then I can potentially work the field, and I can potentially help to cultivate peros, to cultivate produce, and then I can even sell that produce and I can continue to go on with my parnasa.
Selling the produce
is exactly what I would do in every other year. I can't do that this year because if it's my farm and I was working it during that seventh year, so that in of itself is an isser. And then the produce also, which may or may not be true here, the produce also is going to bear kedusha.
Right, because the analogy that you use with chametz is that we're selling our actual products to
the... Granted. Meaning it's the idea, I only mean to compare it as follows, that there is a means of a paper sale, of something of a legal fiction, in order to avoid ownership of something that I would rather not own for halachic purposes. Right. But you knew me in the wall, I know that I'm still going to repossess it shortly, and I know that nobody really is taking this. The guy doesn't really plan on marching into my home and taking all of my whatever, my scotch, my Cheerios, my pasta. I know that he's not really planning on marching into the pizzeria and taking all of their flour or frozen dough. But it's a sale. It's a sale, and it's a kinyan, it's legitimate, so can we apply that as well to...
I mean, in Israel, when you live there, they sell through through Beis Din. They sell fruits of Shavuos, and they get money like for the tircha, whatever it is.
Correct. Right. So that is another strategy. Another strategy is what's
cheaper.
Yes.
You still have to just make sure that you dispose the food properly.
Correct. So what that is referred to, that's referred to as Otzer Beis Din.
Right.
So Otzer Beis Din is a little bit different, whereby basically it's still my field, my Jewish owned field. But in effect, I'm almost mafkir it to Beis Din. Beis Din takes control over the field, and since it now becomes a communally owned field as opposed to a privately owned field, they're allowed to have it worked. They then hire farmers. Now I still can't pay for the actual produce. I can pay for almost like to break it right. They put it all into an otzer, into like a storage house, and then they sell that pair. So that's a different strategy I don't really want to discuss, but what's important to bring up is that, first of all, this is something of a misconception that has to be something like a bubble that has to be burst for some. Is it mutter to eat fruits of Shemitah? Yes, absolutely. You're supposed to eat fruits of Shemitah. Question is, how do you go about disposing of the remnants of the fruits of Shemitah, fruits or vegetables or grain of Shemitah? What do you do with the leftovers? It has Kedusha. It was grown during this holy year. What's really, really supposed to happen in the most ideal sense, the way that the Torah directly speaks about it anyway, is that I have my farm, I have my field, and peros grow on that field. I have an apple orchard, and the apples just continue to grow even without much cultivation. I don't really do much, but nevertheless, they come back the next year. In most years, maybe I would fertilize, maybe I would water, whatever I would do, but I don't. Nevertheless, the trees are basically full of apples come the Shemitah year. So what really is supposed to happen is I'm permitted to pick some of those apples myself for my own personal enjoyment, for my family's enjoyment. Other people also are permitted to come. I need to ensure that all roadblocks are removed. There is no impediment to people coming on, marching onto my field and taking whatever they want, but they can come and take whatever they can't hoard, but you can take enough for a couple of seudos, however much you would eat basically immediately like that day. Come, enjoy, eat. Absolutely may eat peros shmita, peros shvias. What do you do with the leftover cores and apples or something else? You can't really directly dispose of it. It's considered inappropriate. We can't actively ruin or harm almost peros shvias or the remnants of peros shvias. So it has to be dealt with very, very sensitively. But that's really what's supposed to happen. I'm supposed to actively be mafkir my peros, say it's no longer mine, it doesn't belong to me, it's for anybody who wants to come and take, and I'm also not allowed to work the land.
But part I think of the idea of like the Otsar Bezdin and all that is more also to prevent the financial loss to, because in
right, it's another strategy.
Let everybody go in, and then the damage that people will cause, even
correct,
that Strogan field and stuff like
also
that.
Also true. Right. You have a million people marching on your field. That's not wise.
That.
Right.
So that's part of it, that you see have it like more strategically taken off the tree and.
Right. If you want to know what your field will look like afterwards, visit the Young Israel Kiddush before anyone cleans it up, like the remnant, you know, like you go to your field the year after Shemitah, there's like popcorn on the floor, and there are, you know, branches that have been broken, and there's, you know, like some cake, you know, smushed into, a couple of...
Just generally, how would you ever get food to the city otherwise?
How? Meaning if not for Otzer Beis Din.
Yeah, there's no distribution system.
So right, correct. So there are other things that can be done. Right, unless you're bringing it in from Chutz La'aretz, which is still done today.
What supermarkets sell out just imported fruit?
Right, imported from Chutz La'aretz. So the question is, all those other strategies aside, does this work? Does this have legitimacy to it? Can we say, well, we do it for chametz, so let's also do it for Shemitah?
Yeah. Real quick. So if you have this orchard, you can take what you need, somebody else can they pay you for what they come in to take or not?
No, it's hefker.
Okay.
It's hefker. It has to be hefker. It's absolutely mutter for them to come and take it, and you need to remove any impediment. You need to be sort of actively, well, we'll see whether or not you have to actively be mafkir. That's actually a question.
The leftover. I saw people put it in aluminum foil, especially in
wrap right.
it up. But what is the problem?
So what's usually done when you have something that has kedushas shvias, has kedusha, usually people have the pach shmita. Yeah, it's a separate garbage can so that it doesn't get mixed up with actual garbage. Right. It becomes almost like a compost heap. Sometimes a small little thing, it sits on top of the counter or whatever, and you put everything in there so that it sort of naturally starts to decompose on its own. Once it's ruined on its own, not because I ruined it, not because I put it in the garbage can and then afterwards I spilled my leftover soup onto the apple peels and the apple cores, but it naturally decomposes on its own. Once it gets to a point where people wouldn't eat it anymore, then it can be thrown out. That's really the method. And you have to be really, really careful because it means what happens when you spill? What happens when you spill? So you have Shemitah orange juice and then you spill it and then you have to, you know, like wring it back out.
Into the orange juice also not just to the...
Any produce. Anything that you turn it into. Crystal crumbs and whatever.
Isn't there also you have that coin people afterwards transition into a coin, or is that something else? That's the Meister.
That's Meister Shani. That's Meister Shani. Okay. That'd be Meister Shani. Okay, so does this work? So you can imagine with all these other ideas and all these other strategies, this is certainly the most elegant if it's mutter. Right?
Heter Mechira.
Heter Mechira, right. Heter Mechira is the simplest because it means that I can just create an arrangement with whichever which with whatever guy would be taking possession of my land, that really, let's just treat it as though it's still mine.
Can we get a definition of what the contract actually looks like? Because like no one's coming to my house to get my breadcrumbs.
Right.
Because it has zero value, it's a pain to come to my house.
There's the breadcrumbs.
But if you tell me you have 200 acres of prime land,
right.
I might be a little more interested. It's worth the hassle. So
what's
the contract look like?
It may be... The truth is, I'm not certain. Baruch Hashem. It may be similar, but with an understanding. Are you really good for it? Do you really have the money for it? And as much as somebody might not come. Let's say that I have a. Let's translate it into what Mechiras Chametz really used to be about. It is a novelty that we all do Mechiras Chametz, right? Once upon a time, when Mechiras Chametz was first employed, it was really employed for distilleries. And for breweries and things like that, people who would have large quantities of chametz for commercial sale. So let's say I have a supermarket, market, store, whatever it is. So then you're talking about real significant product that, I don't know, maybe somebody will come and actually assume ownership. It's feasible, I guess, in the theoretical. But the fact of the matter is, whoever I'm selling it to, he already has his parnasa. He's doing something else. He's not in the supermarket business. The idea of just like assuming all of this product and this entire inventory, it just never happens. And let it be assumed anyway that this is just not going to happen. The person that I'm selling it to, he doesn't really have an interest. He actually knows that he's just doing me a favor. He doesn't have the means. He doesn't have the wherewithal. Maybe even if theoretically he does. But if between me and him, I know that let's say every time, and we've done this for the past three Shemitahs, right? And me and his father and like Mahmoud and I go way back, and we do this every single Shemitah. And every single Shemitah, he buys it, and I work the land, and I take the peros, and then I sell it. And now 7 years later, so I want to do it all over again. And he gives me license. Sure, it's fine. I'm Michael. You can take it, and it's all right, and it's yours. Yeah. Really, really, this is my. And you go through this every year with Mechiras Chametz. If you ever want, you can come in. Yes, I know. I can come in. I can drive to your house, and I can come into your garage, and I can take your scotch, and I can drink it myself. I know that I can do that. But he never does. He never does. So that in of itself does that either negate the Mechira or make this Mechira. And by the way, there may be other considerations also.
The price might be
onerous. Huh? The price itself may be onerous, and we'll see that it could be that this just, even the mechanism in of itself perhaps doesn't even work for other reasons. Yeah.
So doesn't this seem a little farcical?
Yeah, but it's like the thing about writing a farcical is that you never forget.
I didn't.
it's legal fiction. But it's legit. But if you cross all the T's and dot all the I's, you can make a go of it. We do this in other way. We do this with Prosbol also. Right? Prosbol also is taking a loan that really should be canceled, and we say, no, sign here, and it's not canceled. Wow, that was magic.
It's like there was a reason. Like, so it can now tell us.
Granted. But the reason we understand the motivation, but does that in of itself validate the mechanism? Not you. I mean, the mechanism itself has to really work. It has to be legitimate. So in that case, the mechanism really works, and at least as far as maybe it's not exactly what the Torah had in mind, but if it works and it functions and it's valid within the context of halacha, so then are there other things? Do I really need to be encumbered by the spirit of the law? Yeah.
So what is the reason why there's a noticeable percentage in Israel who are not so mechan heter?
So that's what we're going to see. We'll see all the back and forth, right? Why people are, why people aren't, the pros, the cons, the yeses, the nos. But this is at least why it's compelling and what it helps to get around.
And again, if I remember correctly, some people say, even though it's written in the Doraita, is it the Rabbana, depending
right.
how you hold, is it really applicable in today's day and age?
Correct. So another consideration of this, I didn't really bring, we'll see it maybe referenced, but also, Naniach, let it be assumed, Shemitah bizman hazeh is midirabbanan. Shemitah is midirabbanan. If it's midirabbanan, what that means immediately is that you don't have to do. No, what it means is that there is greater latitude. There's greater latitude.
In Israel also?
Exclusively in Israel. Shemitah doesn't apply in You're joking. Yeah, there's no shmita.
No, he's saying like fruits
that
come.
What about the fruits? That's the oranges.
That's the chumra of the week. The shmita in Chutz La'aretz.
No,
that what?
Fruits that come here.
Fruits that come here from Israel. Sometimes they sell
Israeli fruit. Martin's. Oh, correct. Right. Right. Yeah. Granted. Right. Meaning whatever kedusha is imbued into that, into the whatever issue that shmita presents. That today it would be midrabanan, either because for a whole number of reasons.
Applies here, the same, whatever applies in Israel applies
absolutely.
Here.
So right.
The same level. It's not like a frushes chal or something. You could say that in Israel was like a mitzvah kliyah that would.
Well, even so, meaning if you actually take that dough and then bring it to Chutz La'aretz, right? So that's still an
Eretz. I understand, but I'm
so it'd be like that, or Israeli produce, right? Trumos and Maisers doesn't apply to our produce, but if you bring in clementines from Israel, so then it would apply, or carrots or whatever. Okay? But that it applies midrabanan also gives us a little bit more latitude. Okay. Fine. Issue number one. So if you sell to a guy, so now my field has been sold to a non-Jew, and we wrote up the contract and we performed all legitimate kinyanim a la mechiras chametz. So first of all, what is the status of that produce? Does that produce bear kedusha or not bear kedusha? Is the produce that's grown on the land still considered to be kadosh or not, still considered to be shemitah produce?
Meaning, because only if it's grown on the land of a Jew.
Perhaps it's only if it's grown on the land of a Jew. We'll see what might be the actual trigger for this. But only if it's grown on the land of the Jew does it actually become Shemitified. Right? Yes. But that if it's grown on the land of a non-Jew, then it wouldn't.
Does the contract say the contract dies at the end of the year, or is the contract just like?
I'm not certain how the buyback works.
Is the sale done before the produce is on the trees?
It would need to be, yeah. Right. Yeah, it would need to be.
Before they are grown.
Before it's grown.
Not before it's picked, before it's worked or anything.
I think that starts on Rosh Hashanah.
It starts on...
Because...
It starts on Rosh Hashanah, but... That's for other things. It would need to start in advance of Rosh Hashanah.
Which Rosh Hashanah?
No, Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah.
Oh.
Right. Right, or Tishrei. Yeah. Yes, young lady.
If it's not, if the whole point, if you sell to a guy, and it's not shmita, like this is the whole thing because it's in our Yisrael, that's why shmita. Because if it's not, even let's say there's a farm owned in America,
right,
by a Jew, then it's the same thing as just a farm owned in our Yisrael. If it's not because
so that Yisrael. So that's the question. Does the fact that a farm is owned by a guy in Eretz Yisrael, does that make it as though it's in Chutz La'aretz? Does that mean that it doesn't have the same right inherent kedusha as a farm in as any other farm in Eretz Yisrael, or not? Or perhaps it has more, and it's not just like a farm that's in Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, is it dependent upon where it is geographically located, or does it depend upon actual ownership, the bailus of that given plot of land?
I'm gonna let you start and stop it. I was gonna ask a question.
Yes.
So, I mean, really, isn't the real issue a question of where does the kedusha come from?
That is,
does it come from the land itself, or does it depend upon the ownership of the?
That's at least part of the question, and we'll see. This actually is the subject of a really, really important machlokas latter day Rishonim. This is a machlokas between the Beis Yosef and the Mabit. The Beis Yosef speaks about this. This is in Sefer Avkas Rochel. And the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, says as follows, just in the interest of time, just skip down to that last line there. Here's the punchline. V'imbanu ladun Yosef tam yesh lo omer, sheyesh lo kinyin lahavkia mishvias v'kro ksiv, v'yisash shavas ha'aretz lachem. Lachem v'lo l'goy. Makes a diuk in the actual pasuk, that when it says that shvisas ha'aretz shavas ha'aretz lachem, shavas ha'aretz lachem, that it should be for you, that means for you, but not for a goy. If the field itself is owned by a non-Jew, then Shabbos Haaretz doesn't apply. Shemitah doesn't apply. If it's owned by Mahmud, then there is no such thing as Shemitah on that given piece of land. It is dependent upon ownership rather than just the fact that it's contained within the four borders of Eretz Yisrael. The Mabit argued. He wrote, he was quoting a different sefer, and then he says, ah, but there was a note pointed out as follows. Tema, amai mutarin, why should this be mutar? Demashu hu asur min hatorah, that which would otherwise be asur min hatorah, so he's speaking about on a d'oraisa level, right? As we said, this for us would be a d'rabbanon level, at least bizman hazeh. Bepnei shabes ha'aretz u'kdushasa lo hufka bekinyin ha'goy, just because a goy is the one to be kona that field doesn't mean that it's not still part of Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't mean that Shemitah no longer applies. V'mkein ma'shezor ha'goy b'karkao b'Eretz Yisrael b'shvias aser, it would still be aser. He goes on to talk about svichim, that svichim after growth, which is a derabanan, we don't allow on the field of a Jew. That wouldn't apply, but that basically the primary produce that grows on this land, just because you sold it to a goy, what difference does it make? It's still in Eretz Yisrael. Who cares who you sold it to? Who cares who owns it? If it's part of Eretz Yisrael, then Shemitah applies. Shemitah applies. That means that the actual peros themselves become sanctified, become holy. This is actually tied into another consideration, which is really the subject of the machlokas between the two of them, between the Beis Yosef and the Mabit, as to whether or not you need to be, there is an obligation to actively be mafkir, the peros, as I mentioned before. If you have an obligation to be mafkir, the act of making something hefker, this is hereby hefker because it's Shemitah, if I'm obligated to do that, and that serves as the trigger for this actually, for this like activating Shemitah, the Kedusha of Shemitah, so that is all wrapped in here. The Mabit says that that happens automatically. There's no obligation, strictly speaking, that the farmer has to do, that the owner has to be mafkir. If that is something that the owner has to do, the guy is not going to be mafkir the peros, and therefore there's no kedusha because it's not hefker. They go hand in hand. Saying that it is shmita is to say that it's hefker peros. If the guy retains ownership, so then it's not sanctified, it's not holy. But the Jew has an obligation to do so. He's going to be mafkir it. And when he does, that's when it becomes sanctified. But anyway, a very, very important debate that existed between the Mabit, and it's not exactly clear who we paskin like. It seems that the Minhag Yerushalayim had been to assume like the Beis Yosef. The Chazon Ish says that no, the halacha really accords with the Mabit. And this is part of this hotly debated contest over Heter Mechira. Does Heter Mechira do anything? Or did I simply transfer ownership to somebody else, but the Peros are still the Peros? The Peros are still Kadosh, they're still sanctified, and we have to treat them the exact same way and in the exact same manner.
I thought everyone would take like Peros from a guy from the Shomron or wherever, no?
It depends where specifically, but not necessarily if it's really within the borders of Eretz Yisrael.
So if it's in, no, I'm saying like, let's say they grew something outside of Shechem, Goyim owned it, whatever, people would argue whether or not you could eat that?
I believe so. Yeah, I think so.
So they only take it from like Gaza or whatever.
Right. Jordan, whatever, you know, something that's...
And Jordan's Eretz Yisrael.
Exactly. No, not necessarily. Not necessarily.
That's where the borders are.
Well, there's a whole other layer of this conversation, which is what are the actual borders of Eretz Yisrael? Both L'Chomer and also L'Kula. First of all, right, Avram Avinu was promised certain borders that are ginormous, right, that are far larger than anything else that was ever part of, like, Malchus David, right?
Should we go by whatever happened with Ezra, or...?
So, I'm not sure. I'm not sure, actually. There's another consideration is what happens if something, by the way, is absolutely outside of biblical Israel. Well, Maisa, Jews are living there as part of the state of Israel. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a tshuva about this. What do you do with a lot? What happens if things are grown within a... What about Trumas and Maisers, even apart from Shemitah? What do you do with that? Mm-hmm. So he assumes that basically, if it's sort of contiguous and it's treated and it feels, it lives and breathes like Eretz Yisrael, it basically becomes part of Eretz Yisrael for that purpose. No. Way south, yeah, it's way south of the real borders. Yeah. Way sort a large portion of the Negev wasn't part of Eretz Yisrael. Bottoms out much further north than it does today. So number two issue of selling to a guy, aside from the actual kedusha of the produce, even if you would say that the produce that the produce is not sanctified, meaning let's say that the mechira works in that regard. I've transferred ownership, it's not my field. Since it's not my field, the produce that is being produced isn't really Shemitah produce. Does that give me the right to work the land? Does that then mean that I can stay on the land as a farmhand? Does that then mean that I can cultivate and that I could do whatever I usually ordinarily do when I'm sitting on my own farm? So we have two different Gemaras that we need to contend with. Number one is Gemara in Gittin Daf Samach Beis. V'almir Rav Dimi Bar Shishn Mishmei Derav Ein Odrin Im Hagoy Bashvias. We don't work the land alongside a guy, meaning on the guy's land, during Shvias. I can't be a farmhand in Eretz Yisrael, even on somebody else's land. I can't plow somebody else's land during Shemitah. Gemara in Sanhedrin, on the other hand, Kadamacher Zerbiyanai, Rabbiyanai announced, Poku Uzdizaru, go out and sow, plant seeds, Bishvias, Mishum Arnona, because of the tax. Go, cultivate, do whatever you have to do, because of the tax. As a result of the tax, he was Matir, being able to perform agricultural work in Eretz Israel. How does that work? So Tosas gives a couple of different possibilities, and he explains as follows. So in Tomar, you'd ask as follows. Mishum Arnona Yitiru Lachosh V'Lizro Da'avisur Mida Oraisa. It could be an Isur Da'oraisa, depending on, some of it's dependent on the amount of, it may well be dependent upon the population. That if a rove of Klal Yisrael lives in Eretz Yisrael, then it would become Da'oraisa. Today, we're not quite at that point yet. Israel has the largest slice of the pie of Jewish population worldwide, but it is not quite at majority, and therefore it would be the Rabbanan today. But Tosa says that potentially this could even be an Isser D'Oraisa. So he says Yesh Lomer D'Mayri B'Shvias B'Zmanas Ed D'Rabbanan. Talking about now, talking about when it's Mid D'Rabbanan. How does that answer the question? So it's Mid D'Rabbanan, and therefore what? So the second answer at least helps to some degree explain the first. Inami, another possibility is that even if it is Daraisa, what's that?
The Tempe Gemara is a minority of Jews living.
It was already there, right. The question is, was this like a conceptual, or is this Lamaisa, once it's already Midrabanan. So Inami, Yeshlomer, the Pikuach Nefeshu, Shesho Lahem HaMelech Mas, Ve'in Lahem Mai Yifre'enu. There was a tax. There was an Arnona. So there was this massive tax that was levied on the Jewish people living, the Jewish population of the land of Israel, and they didn't have any means of paying it off. And they would die at the hands of the king. It was life or death. It's life or death. If they couldn't pay off the tax, then that's it. Then they would be slaughtered at the hands of the king. So the first answer is that it's a derabbanan. So what? Just because it's a derabbanan, we're permitted to ignore it? No, but if it's mid derabbanan, it sounds like Tosas is saying if it is mid derabbanan and it represented a significant loss of money, so then we know certain derabbanans we let the reins go a little bit. And here it may be specific to Shemitah. This may be a general statement about derabbanans. But again, once we say it's derabbanan, if there's a real significant loss of money, so that's when you could be matir. The other possibility is that no. Not only if it's a significant loss of money, it's only if there's real pikuach nefesh at stake. If the malchus will kill us because we're not able to pay off the tax, so then it would be permitted to work the land. The same way that you could violate any mitzvah, basically, as a means of saving your own neck. So, those are two major answers, a major, major distinction between those two answers. The difference between those two answers is, what about today? Can you still do this? Shemitah represents a major loss of money. It's a major loss of money. I net $500,000 off of my farm every single year. And by letting it just lay fallow, I will lose $500,000. Do I have to do that? Or can I say that since it's only midrabanan and it's a significant loss of money, I'm permitted to work the field? And granted, it's going to create all of this kadosh perishria. So we'll deal with it. We'll deal with holy, sanctified fruits the same way that today we deal with otzer basin and all these other things. So we'll deal with it. We'll deal with that degree of sanctity. But it would be mutter. Is it mutter? Is it not mutter? According to this first answer of Tosas, it would sound like it would be mutter bizman hazeh.
That's more pikuach nefesh.
Two different answers. First answer is that because of the Arnona, since it's only me the Rabbanan. Second answer is that no, because it's Pikuach Nefesh.
And Israel has higher tax estate than they did in the time of the Rome.
It's even though they nickel and dime you and it's current. Yeah. So it's a significant it would be a significant loss of money just for the loss of Parnassa. The question is why was it not already considered to be a Pikuach Nefesh before the Arnona? Right, even without the tax, isn't it always a huge loss of money to not work your field, to let your land lay fallow? Why do you need the Arnona? Why is that like an important piece here? If it's really just a matter of a significant loss of money, so then what difference did it make if they were being taxed or not? No matter any way you slice it, it's going to be a significant loss of money. Okay, so we have these two different answers in Tosos.
It's way more.
It's way more.
It's compounded.
Fine, but do you not already, meaning to say, do you not already clinch whatever, by any estimation of what is considered to be Hesed Merubah, anywhere else in Halacha, do you not already get there by saying that I had to take a loss of my entire year's Parnassah? Presumably you do. Presumably. So if that be the case, then why do you need to go the extra mile of Arnona? And if we're saying that no, only once it's like real, 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 real significant hefset that you are going to lose all of that year's Parnassah, and then they're also going to tax you to oblivion, so then does that, is that applicable today? Today I'll lose my whole Parnassah, but I'm not also going to get, you know, taxed on whatever.
Tax, wasn't that the example that you gave where you can't pay the tax and therefore you're putting your life in jeopardy?
That's the second answer. So there are two discrete answers. Answer number one, issue number one, possibility number one, Tosa suggests is, look, it's only an Isser Derabbanan. If it's an Isser Derabbanan and it constitutes a significant financial loss, we can be Mekel. Answer number two is that maybe we're not talking about an Isser Derabbanan. Maybe we're talking about an Isser Daoraisa. But even if it's an Isser Daoraisa and your life was going to be on the line, then it would be mutter to violate that prohibition.
Would it apply nowadays in a time when you'd have maybe a mortgage on the field or you owe a bunch of money for your farm equipment?
Which answer? Answer one, answer two.
Answer one, where it's the tax of the financial loss.
I would think you get there even without that. I would think just by saying that I'm going to let my land lay fallow, so now shouldn't it be mutter for me to work the land.
But that's where the Torah, like the Torah's reason is you just have to lay your land lay fallow. So it's not, that part's not the loss. I mean, that part is the loss, but
it's a loss.
Isn't there a promise of abundance that you...
Oh, okay, yes. So the Chazon Ish is actually going to talk about that. Right. So what are the promises of it? Right.
Yeah, exactly. My point is, don't you prepare for that? You want to forecast them? Do you know this?
Right. Don't you know it ahead of time? Don't you know that it's... Okay, fair. And also, what happened to that bracha? Where'd that bracha go? How could I possibly be in this fix? How could I possibly be in this position? So Rabbi Yana announced that you should do so.
The Gemara here is talking about a scenario where you're sold to a guy. Is that the
assumption? No, I'm sorry. The Gemara here, both these cases are talking about where I'm working the land of the guy, which is really why you need to have this Arnona situation.
Land
meaning
of the law owned by a guy.
Right. Do I need to work on their land in order to come up with the money that I'll need to pay the tax? Right? Saying in our case,
definitely not discussing working,
not mechir or anything like. Right, correct. So the Chazon Ish says in Hilchos Shvi'is, the Chazon Ish was a major, major opponent of the Heter Mechira, and he said as follows. He has a whole section in the Chazon Ish on Hilchos Shvi'is, and he says, "Hadenechlu chach meitzvas haynu rak le'in kedushas aperus." This whole issue, really going back to the issue of this debate between the Mabit and the Beis Yosef. That whole debate is over whether or not the peros that are grown are going to be considered holy, are going to be imbued with kedusha. Aval charishu zriu sha'ar avodos lechulei alma ein chiluk bein oved bekarka Yisrael laoved bekarka nachri. That whole question is about the peros, the fruits. Are the fruits holy? Are they sanctified? Are they kadosh? Or are they not? But you want to know about whether or not it's mutter to work the land? It is always usser to work the land, says the Chazon Ish. If I sell the land, let's assume that selling the land is effective. It now belongs to a non-Jew. you're still not allowed to work the land, says the Chazon Ish. Beinosel Malacha Da'araisa Odirabanan. It doesn't matter what kind of work you're doing. Da'araisa Odirabanan. The Kedushas Ha'aretz the Chuli Alma Lo Paka. Because certainly to that degree, neither the Beis Yosef nor the Mabit would argue that there's no such thing as Kedushas Ha'aretz, just that there is no more Kedushas HaPeros. See the difference between the two? What they're arguing about, their debate is whether or not the fruits that are grown are sanctified, would be considered to be Shemitah produce. It's not Shemitah produce, because after all, I sold it to a guy, and the guy owns those that produce, and it was produced on the guy's land. That's all true. But the land itself, even if you say that the produce would not be Shemitah produce, you're not permitted to work the land of Eretz Yisrael. You're not permitted to cultivate, you're not permitted to plow, you're not permitted to prune, you're not permitted to do any of those things. All of those activities are usur, says the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish says, so what about that Gemara about Arnona? V'afal gavd mishon Arnona, this is in another section. Afal gavd mishon Arnona, here tiru, hitiru hakol kod amir b'sanhedrin. So, hasam anisei tfei, al yidei ha-malchus. They were forced because of the malchus. This is like the second answer of Tosos. That's what he's of a kar of hadavar lepikuach nefashos. That they were really, really pressed. Or maybe he's even saying that even on the first side of Tosos, really, that it would be at least kar of lepikuach nefashos. They were really, really being forced into this. Pressed into this sort of labor. Forced into this position. Adide anius ugvias arnonios. So meaning, I think, even if you say the first way that it was just, well, it's abundant, they were able to be a little more makel. It wasn't actually pikuach nefesh, but it was close to pikuach nefesh. Now, Hadichsiv.
Starvation.
This is a king attacking you. Correct. Right. Meaning on the first side. Not that if you don't pay up, we're going to kill you, but that what are we supposed to do? If we really give up all this money, we have to go into our piggy bank in order to pay off the Arnona this year. We're going to have nothing left. We're going to be in such a state of anios that we'll all perish anyway. Hadichsiv. So v'chitema ma v'chitomar ma nochal. Right? So what's the answer when the Jewish people say, what are we supposed to eat during the seventh year? What do you mean? V'tzivisi, Moshe, as you said, is birchasi. So don't worry, I'll send forth my blessing, I'll send forth my bracha. What about that? Doesn't that mean that we'll be settled and we'll be set either way? No. Ena kavana havtacha shalotavu lidei pikuach nefesh al yidei chesron tevuas shana shvias. It's not an absolute promise that you won't come into any state of pikuach nefesh because you have a lack of food. Ela havtachas bracha bishvil shmiras shvias. It is a promise that you'll receive some additional bracha by means of keeping shvias. Umanochal dichsev ritzon olomer. What does it mean when we say, what are we supposed to eat? Lo kemosha tachshov. It's not like you think b'derech hateva, that it's going to be natural. Sheshvitascha tavilacha hefsid. That by keeping shmita, you're going to be brought to a place of hefsid. V'tichya b'chayei tzar, and you're only going to be able to subsist through a life of difficulty and strain. Ela atzavelecha sabracha, I'll send forth my bracha, v'haftacha zu esher shiyigrom hacheit lekapcha v'gam habracha ena ela l'chol Yisrael. Somehow or another, he's saying that the bracha is not exactly what you think, and I'm not so clear on what the bracha is in the Chazon Ish's estimation, but he says that certainly that bracha might be repealed. That bracha might be repealed for any number of reasons, I don't know. Who knows exactly what's on a Kaddish Baruch Hu's scorecard? Right, so on the one hand, we say that if you keep this mitzvah, you have this zechus, and you'll do well, you'll get all this bracha, everything will be wonderful. But I don't know. Yeah, but you know, you also spoke Lashon Hara yesterday. I don't know, but you also you were dishonest in your business. I don't know, but you also Chasar, I shouldn't even say it out loud. You took out your cell phone during Chazaras Hashanah, whatever it was, something really, really like absolutely heinous, horrible. Right, so who knows? I don't know exactly. Maybe, yeah, you got the bracha, and then the bracha was repealed, or the bracha was rescinded. It's very difficult. Very, very difficult. The same way that we don't point to people and say, because he was chayav karis. Oh, because the thing, yeah, that's why that happened, because he was chayav karis. We don't, it's hard to know. It is true that there is reward and punishment. It's true that sometimes there's even skarva onesh in this world, that there are limited brachos and klavos that a Kaddish Baruch Hu, yes, does send and does present and does manifest even in this world. But it's hard to know exactly what. And maybe, I don't know, maybe he did something else and that bracha was repealed, that bracha was taken away. But at any rate, Chazon Ish says it's not exactly like, no, absolutely. If you decide that you're going to keep Shemitah, then everything will just be perfectly fine and everything will be great. It's not exactly as straightforward. Torah does all that, and it's hard to say exactly how the bracha is necessarily going to become expressed. Either way, the Chazon Ish was, again, very, very strong opponent to Hetzer Mechira. He says, what are you doing by selling the land? You sell the land, you're still not allowed to work the land. So a lot of good selling the land actually did you. There is a whole other issue at play here, simply when it comes to selling land in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew. Give them no quarter. Give them no chanaya. Give them no respite. Give them no place to... Give them no parking space. Don't give them a place to park. Don't give them a place where they can have a foothold in Eretz Yisrael. This is from my bar mitzvah parasha. It's near and dear. Unsanam Hashem Elokecha lefanecha v'hikisam hakareim tacharimosam. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them over into your hand, you should smite them, you should thrash them, you should kick them out, you should obliterate them. Lo sichros lahem b'ris, you cannot seal a covenant with them, with the Kana'ani nations. V'lo sichaneim, you cannot give them any, I don't know, rest, cannot give them any living space in the land. So the Netziv, in a tshuva, seemingly speaking about the writings of Rav Kook, so the Netziv says that, go to the underlining, but MS, Haravagain Hanal, Barach Me Hazev, such a great, it's like we would say in English, from the frying pan into the fire, uh-huh. Right? He says, Barach Me Hazev Upaga Bo Ari. He ran from the wolf and he ran into the mouth of the lion. In all of your effort, in all of your attempt to try to avoid the prohibition of Shemitah, which, by the way, Bizman Hazeh is really only, as he goes on to say, it's only an Issur Derabanan. You know what you've done? You've sold Karka in Eretz Yisrael to a guy that's an Issur Daraisa. Lo Sechaneim. You're not allowed to sell land to a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael. Which, by the way, is a major, major issue to keep in mind, even. Own land, selling an apartment, selling a farm, nothing to do with Heter Mechira necessarily, but just selling land to a non-Jew in Eretz Israel and giving a non-Jew a greater foothold in what is supposed to be the land of exclusively of the Jews. Now, as much as I say that it's supposed to be the land exclusively of Jews, is that really the case? Does the Torah have any conception of a non-Jew living in Eretz Israel?
Yeah.
Ger Toshav. What about a Ger Toshav? So we know that it's mutter to allow some sort of non-Jew to live in Eretz Yisrael. So that's one of the items that's put forth by Rav Kook. And elsewhere in this tshuva from the Netziv, he dismisses that. He says that's not what this is talking about. That's not the issue. We're not talking. You're not a Ger Toshav just because you're a guy. But at any rate, Rav Kook does bring that up as a possibility. Rav Kook also notes. He says Yosi Yeshalom Kamo. This is in the next Mishpat Kohen from Rav Kook. Rav Kook, by the way, was a great advocate for Heter Mechira with limits. Rav Kook did so apologetically. He says that if we don't do this, basically the yeshuv is going to cave in. So there's a lot of, not only is there debate surrounding Heter Mechira, there's also debate surrounding, so how long does this go on for? How long do we allow this for? At what point do you say that we're able to like move on and to move past, which is always a very, very difficult thing to do. Right? Once you let the cat out of the bag, it's very, very difficult to put it back in. If you recall, during COVID, I made like no mention of this, but during COVID, there were the Kashrus organization, some of the national organizations were talking about what to do with all of the Kalim mikvahs closed. What do you do with Kalim, especially before Pesach? What if you need to tovel things for Pesach? What are you supposed to do? No kelim mikvah. So there are all these different. So you could sell it to a guy, and then if it's sold to a guy, and then you bring it back home, and then it's in your house, and not really, like, sound familiar? Sell it to a guy, and it's not really yours, and you're just using it. It's on loan to you, and since you don't really own it, it's not owned by a Jew. There's no obligation. You could put it outside your house and just be mafkir it. And since it's hefker, it's not really mine. I bring it back in, but I don't really own it. I never take ownership. All these different things. The reason why I never made mention of it is because. Because Cooper River's right here. Come on. Get it. That's right. And if you have an issue, you're not able to go, so we'll arrange it. We'll figure it out. We'll take care of it. But more than anything, it's, I wasn't thinking about COVID. I spoke to some other the local Rabbanim about this. I wasn't thinking just about COVID. I was thinking about now and next year. next year, I'm sure, I'm certain that on a busy Erev Shabbos, when like you come home with a new serving platter, oh, I didn't get it. Didn't we do the thing? What do you do? Oh, you put it outside, you count to three, you put your right hand in, you put your right hand down, you put your right hand in, you shake it all about, you turn it, and you hefker, and then I take it back in, and it's fine. It's, what do you mean? But come on, that hefker expired. What are we still doing that for? Let's move on. But it's hard. It's hard. Once you become accustomed to something, it's very, very difficult to take, like, you know, a new halachic step up. So whenever Rav Kook issued this heter, his belief that we should be makel for heter mechira, it was always with kind of like a mealy mouth, yeah, we kind of have to, but he absolutely felt that it was 100% halachically valid, no less than where we perform such things in other areas of halacha. But he says, he compares it to like what we say in the Gemara in Gittin, about really there's an isser against being meshachrer an eved, freeing an eved kanani, freeing a kanani slave. So it's usser, but you can do it for a dvar mitzvah. Why can you do it for a dvar mitzvah? Because then that's for you. You're not doing it for them. You're doing it for you. It's like selfishly. I want it to count in a minyan. The mutter mitam de lo sichanim ne'asar davka k'shemachayim l'tovasam. He says that lo sichanim is similar. I'm not permitted to give the non-Jew a foothold in Eretz Yisrael when it's for them. When it's in order to be neighborly and it's good, and you know you live here and I live there and it's fine, and we'll create a space here. I'm not delving into that, and there are other considerations, whatever. But just from a purely halachic vantage point in this particular mitzvah, lo sichanim means when I'm doing it for you. If I'm doing it for me, if I'm doing it for selfish reasons, this is, as he says at the very end, shehila tova senu kadei sheyischazku Yisrael bekarka. This isn't so that we give up the land. This is so that we secure the land. This is that we know we'll be able to stay on the land, because if we don't allow farming throughout Shemitah, that's it. It's over. The Yeshuv is going to crumble. It's going to falter. It's going to fail. It's going to implode, and we'll never be able to climb back out from it. This is for our sake, not for their sake. Therefore, it was mutter. The Nitziv sort of goes like point for point on all of Rav Kook's points and points that he believes otherwise and argues pretty vehemently. But one last item that needs to be considered, which we could equally discuss when it comes to Mechiras Chametz, and we do to a certain degree, is, did you even mean it in the first place? Did you even mean it? Did you really mean to sell it? Right? Did you really have what the Rambam calls for and what we refer to as Gemiras Das? So the Rambam in Hilchos Mechira, Perek Dalet Halacha Yud Aleph, says, Zeh klal gadol yeh biyadchas. This is a great klal in your hand. Great principle of transacting in halacha. Hakonas ha-metatlin, if a person is buying objects, in pasak hadamim, if let's say they come to a set price, v'chakach yigbiyah, and then afterwards he says, fine, agree on the price, now I pick it up, then kana. Then that's considered to be valid kinyan. If you do it in reverse, the Rambam says, obviously that doesn't work. Why? Meaning I say, I want to buy this from you. Yeah, fine, I pick it up. I'm buying this from you. How much? What do you want for it? Well, I want $30 for it. Okay, good. I take out the money and I wasn't kona it yet, despite the fact that I performed the maisa kinyan of actually picking it up. I performed the act that indicates that we're transacting, that I am acquiring this from you. If I did that before a meeting of the minds as to how much I was going to purchase it from you for, that is not a valid sale. Why? You're lacking Gemiras Das. You haven't completely made up in your Das, in your mind, in your head, that this is what I'm actually purchasing it for. Because what happens if you say $1,000? Some loon, oh no, do you know it's a family heirloom? I couldn't possibly part with it. I have such sentimental value. So just because we happen to have had a meeting of the minds afterwards, what if we didn't? How can I really be secure? How can you be secure? How can I be sure? How can you be sure? You need to have a meeting of minds whenever it is that you're performing any sort of transaction in halacha. This is also another piece that's really, really heavily debated. By the way, this is something that comes up with Mechiras Chametz as well. Is it really Gemiras Das if I say to the non-Jew, listen, this is your field, right? It's your field. I'm just going to be working it and you know, cultivating all of the fruits and then selling all the fruits and then pocketing all the money. Personally, this is really your field though, right? Yeah, Rabbi. It's really my field. Okay. So does that work in particular? In particular, when you continue to act in a fashion that indicates that it's really your field. It's one thing to say that I'm selling it and then I'm leaving and I'm just going to let it lay fallow. It's one thing if I'm saying that, yeah, I'm selling it and this belongs to you and I'm not going to touch it, I'm not going to do anything to it. What if I say that I'm selling it to you, immediately afterwards, I bust out the plow and I pull the John Deere tractor out of the garage. I'm acting like it's mine. So did either of us really have intent to actually sell it? This comes up with Mechiras Chametz. So when you and I sell our chametz, we put it behind closed doors and we don't interact with it, we don't touch it, we don't look at it, we have nothing to do with it. Absolutely, it's 100% yours. And the fact of the matter is, if you want to come and you want to buy my novelty size bottle of scotch for me, you know, we already had a couple of shots, blah, 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 blah. You want to come and give me fair market value for it? Sure, whatever, I don't care, that's fine. Yeah, you want to pay me $150 for my bottle of scotch? Okay, I'll go out after Pesach, I'll buy a new one. I don't care. You want to buy my farm from me? I'm not selling you my farm. This is my parnassus, this is my livelihood. This is Eretz Yisrael. This is like everything that my bubbies and zaydas, like Ramos and Nevers, for me to have this be. I'm not selling you this land. I'm not actually going to let you take possession of it. And by the way, you don't really want it either. And immediately afterwards, I'm going to start acting as though it's mine. So what happens if I sell you my chametz and then I act like it's mine? Like, what if I sell you my chametz? What if I have a supermarket and I sell you my chametz? And then I say, okay, thanks. This is all yours now, right? This is all yours. This belongs to you, right? Yeah. This is, yeah. Okay, great. Bring in the flour from the back and put the challahs over there. And the rye breads are going to go over there. Boop, 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 boop. And I continue to act like it's mine. Is that a valid mechira, or is that not a valid mechira? Machlokas Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Soloveitchik. Whether or not that mechiras chametz works. This is why, when it comes to the everything beyond kosher experience, I advise, don't be somech on that mechira if it's avoidable. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, listen, you signed the contract, you did all the proper kinyanim, whatever you then decide to do afterwards, you don't object in the moment, whatever you decide to do afterwards, that's between you and the guy, and you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the mechira is a valid mechira. Rav Soloveitchik held that if immediately afterwards you begin to act as though this is yours, despite the fact that you just sold it, that's not a mechira at all. There's no gemiras das. Rav Kook held that at least when it comes to mechiras chametz, to the mechira of this karka, it doesn't have to be like I absolutely intend to, yes, this is really yours and this belongs to you and 100% and you're going to take ownership in all of the classical ways, even if only to the degree that, like, you know, like halachically speaking, lest people start to say, and they badmouth heter mechira and how it works and that it's really invalid, he doesn't want anybody being motzi la, speaking ill of heter mechira and doubting it and questioning it. He says, first of all, we do this all the time. These are like our, well, anyway. So we say, we do this all the time. We do this for Bechor, and we do it, he says, for Chametz, and for Shabbos, and for Ribbis. We do this all the time. It's really not a Ha'arama. It's not really just exploiting a loophole. It's good, it's fine, it's valid. He says something very interesting, which is really what we would apply probably to Mechiras Chametz in some capacity also. I do absolutely have intent to sell it to you, because if I know that I don't, then I'm going to run afoul of all these other halachos. So I really have full intent to sell it to you. It's like, is intent to sell to get out of the isser, is that considered a real sale? Or do I have to really fully have in mind that this is yours, the same way that we transact any other property, you'll start to act with it as though it's your field and it's not my field? What is the nature of a proper valid sale in halacha? So Rav Kook again championed the cause that even though it might not be ideal, even though we might not want to do it in the future, even though we might not want to do it, you know, for all the rest of time, at least for now, he says this is absolutely 100% a valid heter. The Chazon Ish held and the Netziv held that absolutely 100%, it's not a valid heter. So largely this doesn't really affect us in Chutz La'aretz. Other than, yeah, sometimes we get Shemitah produce that's shipped in. So what I usually tell people is, look, we're not in Eretz Yisrael. We don't even have to, like how it comes up only with carrots, right? Okay, so you get it. Grapefruit also?
Some citrus fruit.
Dates. Dates.
Wow.
So it's not just carrots. It's okay. It's not just carrots. The truth is, it comes up with even like trumas and maestros, right? Sometimes people just want to avoid trumas. I'll tell you where I saw at Produce Junction, not this year, but they've had like Israeli persimmons also. Yeah, oranges. Yeah, it can happen. It can happen. It is not such an overwhelming sort of concern that it's something that can't just be avoided altogether. The considerations, though, in terms of being a consumer, what it comes down to is if I got it, if I took it, look, I didn't perform the isser, if there is an isser, of working the land. That's been done already. That's been done. Really, what it boils down to for the consumer is, does this fruit have kedushas shvias? It might not. Could be that what the mechira does, like the Beis Yosef says, is that once it's been sold to a guy, it's not kadosh anymore. It's not shmita produce anymore. And therefore, I can eat it just like I would eat any other regular orange. According to the Mabit, though, even if it is owned by a non-Jew, it is still considered to be perishable and needs to be dealt with very, very carefully. I would certainly advise, there are always other options, certainly, that we have in Chutz La'aretz. If you're in Eretz Yisrael, it's a whole other conversation. And if you're going to make this should not be the reason why you don't make Aliyah. Maybe it should be the reason why you don't make Aliyah like this year. Maybe. I don't know. But if you have the opportunity, you certainly should. We'll miss you very much, though. And that's where it becomes a greater consideration. There is stronger and stronger support for saying that even if once upon a time we did need it, that Baruch Hashem, the land is in a very, very different place. It is in a different place because, in part of what we're taking note of, what we're taking stock of today, that having an infrastructure and having a government, it changes stability, it changes security, it changes the economic realities, it changes everything, and it creates incredible opportunities. I think this is one of them. We're able to come. More people are capable and are indeed observing Shemitah now than since the Bayis Sheni, and that's a remarkable thing, and that would not be the case under any mandate other than, or any government other than a Jewish one. It's something that very, very much should be celebrated, and we should very much give our thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Questions, yeah.
Does anyone think that you can repossess your field because the Mechira wasn't real? Anyone think it's that extent of bad Mechira?
Maybe because of this last point. Meaning, even if you say truth is, I'm not sure. I'm not sure on lo sichanim. I don't know if that means that it doesn't, that it's not considered a kinyan. I think it's a real kinyan. It's just that you did a kinyan b'isser, right? You were not permitted to sell it, but you did sell it. As far as Shemitah,
it was a real kinyan. Everyone, you can't put up a high rise. It's not your field. You can't just
meaning
build
the,
on it.
Right, meaning the question of whatever the parameters of the actual mechira may be. But what I mean is that, in terms of repossessing it, if you say that there was really no Gemiras Das to begin with, so then, yeah, I can go. It's still mine. It's still actually mine. According to this other issue of the prohibition of Lo Sechanim, that Isser itself, I don't believe, means that you didn't actually sell it. Sometimes an Isser, like an Isser of Arayos or something like that, right? You can. I wouldn't advise it, but you can try to marry your sister. That's not halachically valid. There's no Tfisas Kiddushin. But depending on the degree of Isser, there may be Tfisas Kiddushin. The Kiddushin actually goes through. It's just that you should... Kohen and right, so doing this in Tafiyomi now, right? Kohen Gadol and Almano, or Kohen and a Grusha, where there's an Isser, but there's still Tfisas Kedushin that still really works. But for other prohibitions, that I believe the still that the actual Kenyan still goes through. If you really take this, the issue of Gemiras, that there's no Gemiras Das, nobody ever meant it, then you could even repossess your field.
Someone who says, I didn't mean the sale.
Right.
Could win on that claim?
Not necessarily. No, not necessarily. I mean, what Rav Moshe Feinstein would say is that the reason why, let's say, from Mechiras Chametz it goes through is because Dvarim Shebelevin and Dvarim. Right. Okay. Where were you at the time of the Mechiras? You didn't say anything, and it went through. It's over. It's done.
So as far as me relying on that for the produce, that sounds pretty good. He can't get his field back. Clearly, the sale worked.
If the sale worked, that doesn't alter... Maybe yes, maybe no. Right, I mean, that would be debated. Did the actual sale go through? Rav Moshe would tell you the fact that now you're saying that, no, I never really meant it, that's called buyer's remorse, seller's remorse, right? That's not legitimate. Others would say, no, of course, you never had Gemiras Das in the first, it was never a sale. So really, so that would be debated. That would be a machlokas in of itself.
So you're selling the entire field? Like, it's 100% so. Sale? It's not like 51% like shears? Or it's not like...
I think so. No, I think
it's,
so.
It's selling it. What throws me off is that...
Are you still working it?
They're still working and selling the produce for profit.
Right. I don't know how that's arranged.
That also.
Right. I don't know how that's arranged.
And have somebody else work it? Like, I'm going to hire new non-Jewish employees for this year. That would make sense to me.
I don't know that that makes a difference in terms of your...
Jewish person getting work for his benefit.
Right. Meaning if I absolutely keep the land and I do nothing to it, I don't think that that does anything. Right, to hire a non-Jewish worker to come and work on my land during Shemitah at my behest under my employ, I don't think that helps.
I think that would be as if you're doing it yourself.
I think so. Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
actual contract.
Yeah, most people who own most people. I imagine this has to be the case that if you own a farm in Israel,
you're probably not doing
it yourself, and you're probably employing a lot of goyim. I would think. I would assume. I know that that's not necessarily part of like the old school, like Zionist ethos, where you know a Jew has to be the one to like pour the asphalt on every little side street and alleyway. But you know, Lamaiso, we've gotten a little more capitalist now.
Kibbutzim have a lot of Jews.
Right. Granted. Yeah. Granted. Yeah. Shkoyach, everyone.